I'm talking to Finian Baker here in Newtown Butler. Finian, you've been making Hurleys for a long time now.
Yeah. It's a third generation. We have documentation from 1939, I think, at this outside. My father made them a lifetime. My father went to work in a sawmill, was playing hurling, buying hurls from down south, and then started to make his own hurls by the fact, virtue of the fact that he worked in a sawmill. He had the skills necessary and the accessibility to the wood to make the hurls. And that's where it started.
And where was home?
Home was 4 miles on the... Home was 1 mile from Clonus on the northern side of the border.
And a place called?
A place called Machravely. Southern side of Machravely.
I see. And what was it like growing up there? Was there many...
It was brilliant growing up until the trouble started. And as a matter of fact, I'd been away for quite a while and came back. I'd been away for different reasons, away from home. And I got married in 1970 and came back home to live in 1971. And of course, at that stage, I was in the civil service in Belfast for 4 years. And the trouble started in Belfast. And for some reason, my mother looking out for me, whatever, I left Belfast and went to Dublin. I went in the civil service labouring on a building site in Dublin for better money. My father was disgusted, but I wasn't, because it was all about money at the end of the day.
And when did you come back?
And I came back home then in 72. I got married in 1870. I came back home late 71, 72.
Okay, and you moved here to
I moved here.
What's the name of this place?
This place is Kilready. Outside Newton Butler. I moved here around 70. When I came home, I moved here.
And who was here before you?
Nobody. This was what they call in terminology a soldier's cottage.
I see.
A wee small cottage. And we bought it. We moved here as a tenant. My sister was here as a tenant prior to me. And I moved as a tenant when she moved. And that time in Northern Ireland, Cathys could not get houses. And my neighbour across the road objected to me getting the house in an awful lot of ways. But I beat him in every one of them and had my house, bought my house, built my house. And
then you continued your father's trade.
Yeah.
What was your father's name?
Joseph Baker. Joe Baker, they called him.
Yeah.
There was a guy in Crow Parish, Seamus McGowan, Jimmy Smith. Jimmy Smith came up with a plan, along with others, to promote hurling in Ireland. And what he done was, the county boards put the order into Crow Park, who distributed the orders amongst the hurling manufacturers, who then delivered the hurls to the people who ordered them in the counties, yeah. And Crow Park paid my father.
I see. And that's... Yeah.
Jimmy Smith came to Dad first, Dad was in a very small way. That would have been, again, in the early 70s, around that time. And Daddy said to me, no matter how much you're making in Dublin, Finian, you can make more here. And anyway, I never wanted to be in this only home making hurleys. It's born and bred in me.
And so you started your business, and did it grow?
It grew massively.
And what? Talk to me about the troubles. How did the troubles affect you?
Well, first of all, we've been on the border. No matter where I go here, in those days, I was going through a checkpoint. Right, especially if I was going south, and we would have been going south to buy timber and various reasons. So every time you went through a checkpoint, you could be there for half an hour, 2 hours. They could strip you, they could arrest you to bring in Newton Butler. It was just hassle, 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 hassle. And again, I wouldn't be the most civilist of peoples, or persons. If you annoyed me, you annoyed me. And I am not as much pro-Irish as anti-Brit. My vote for Bobby Sands was not for Bobby Sands. It was a protest vote against everything that the British government had done to me and the like of it.
Okay, and feeling like that then, so can I ask you the question about republicanism?
Yeah.
And were you a member of Sinn Féin? Or?
My republican background, my Uncle Jack fought in the Rising. My Uncle Tommy fought in the Civil War. And my Uncle Jim fought in the Civil War. Dad's brothers. So republicanism is steeped in me. But there was an incident when my wife was pregnant with my daughter, where the IRA put a bomb at my house.
Where?
In Clonatty, where we in my father's house.
Oh, I see.
Where we lived, and I nearly lost my daughter.
And how did that deploy?
What happened was, our house, years ago, people in Ireland will tell you, there were houses where everybody called for a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Working on the road. People walking the road. We had the guy called the dummy. He was a dummy. He called for tea at my mother every day he walked by. There's another guy, the dwarf, Lynch was his name. He called for tea when he walked by. John Clark was another guy who called for tea when he walked by.
Oh, these were the Knights of the Road.
Knights of the Road. My mother's house was... We were in a thatched house. There's photographs of it in the room. I can show you one if you wish. But my mother was a phenomenal woman with a heart, a huge heart. My mother, education, education, education.
Now, why would the IRA want to put a bomb outside your door?
What happened was the council were working on the road and they left a machine in the vicinity of our house. And the IRA wanted to bomb this machine. They put a bomb in the middle of the machine to destroy it. The bomb didn't go off. But that same particular day, I was in Ballinascreen in Derry with a notice of the council meeting as the Monaghan GAA representative. So that was my thanks from the IRA for promoting my culture. So my opinions have been formulated by what happened to me down the years.
Okay, now continue with it. It's fascinating. That incident kind of was a life changer for you. You decided you would not then get involved, is it?
The reason I left Belfast was that I was being drawn into it. We lived in 121 the Mount Albert Bridge Road in Belfast, myself and a bunch of guys. And three of the guys who were with me were in the movement, in the IRA. And that was the next step for me. And I didn't know if I wanted that next step. My feeling has always been anti-Brit. If the biggest mistake that the British are making in Northern Ireland at the moment, they're making no effort to win over the Catholics into a situation where they would be happy in Northern Ireland.
But when you left Belfast then,
you
left because you didn't want to be drawn in, right?
Yes and no. I was engaged to my wife and she was down here and I was in Belfast. And civil service money was not £66 a month, if I remember correctly. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't going anywhere on that money. So we wanted to get married, we wanted to be together. She couldn't, in those days, you didn't live with your girlfriend. In those days, I'll tell you, you know. So it wasn't a very unhappy situation. And I left Belfast, she came to Dublin and stayed with her friends in Dublin. So we were together than what we were, if you understand, it was a different situation.
And so... when you arrived here in 1971, that was really the Fermanagh started to really suffer from a lot of the bombing.
The unionist population there was none of this. This didn't happen. Bloody Sunday didn't happen. Talk about the Holocaust being denied. There are Protestants who deny that Bloody Sunday ever happened, or that Ballymurphy ever happened. You know, whether it is inward looking or not, education is... We one of the things, Morris, in Northern Ireland, the Protestant had a small family, right? Maybe a girl and a boy. The girl got married and the boy worked the farm or joined the army or the police or something like that. So education wasn't a priority with them.
When you were living here then, was this house targeted? Were you targeted? Was your business?
Yeah, shortly after we moved here, that wall there, I had a hole through it to a gas cylinder outside, right? And the gas cylinder was beside a little workshop of mine where I used to make hurries at night by hand. And somebody gathered up all the shavings, put them around the gas cylinder and lit it with the intention of destroying the house, the occupants and all belonged to it. Now what happened was the plastic pipe to the cylinder and the thing on top of the cylinder melted, so the whole thing didn't go off. That was the first one. That was in 72, 73. In 87 we had 12, 13 fellows going who were going very, very well with two lathes working. We were flying. We had a coal business, we were doing very, very well, and the whole place out there were burned. We had four buildings at the back of the house that were burned. And there was, when the forensic people investigated, I think there was 11 or 12 different fires lit over the three or four buildings. Now, that didn't happen by accident.
And do you know who did this?
I don't know. And I do know.
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, let's put it to you this way, Morris. Are you reading? Do it now. That's common enough. You know, my own side didn't do it. Why would they?
Yeah.
Because I would have been very active in my community. No more I wasn't an active member of Sinn Féin. Nor, I'd never been a member of Sinn Féin.
Have you not?
No. No. Because, you judge the book by its cover.
Okay, now, talk to me about the GAA here at the time,
yeah.
then.
Yeah.
Were they recruiting, promoting?
No, the GAA, and see, there was an incident in Newton Butler I went to it happened in the Bobby Sands era, in the hunger strikers. There was a motion being put to the annual GAA Congress here in the town to have a vote of sympathy with the people who had been on hunger strike. And it turned out that everybody who wanted to vote in the meeting were not paid up members.
Mm-hmm.
And I objected strongly to that. Mm-hmm. I'm a paid up member of the town, of the Newton Butler GAA and Newton Butler Horse Romanus. Why should somebody come in the road and say, and tell me how to put, how I should talk or not talk?
And that's the way it was at the time.
That's the way it was, yeah. It's only recently, Morris, that Sinn Féin have got to be the largest nationalist party in Northern Ireland. The SDLP were always the largest national party in Northern Ireland. And it was back to the first time I got my vote when I turned 18. Carol Healy was a sitting MP. Rory O'Brady came in opposing my Sinn Féin.
Mm-hmm.
They split that vote, and I thought I'd been in, Lord Hamilton walked away with the seat, and took us 15 years to get that seat back. So that's what Sinn Féin done.
And so did this make you angry? Did you...
Morris, I'm a very angry person.
Okay, so what did you do about it?
I didn't do anything about it, except educate my children and promote the language, the culture, and all that sort of crap, which is the way it should have been done in the first place. One of the things I insist on, Morris, that my children voted every election,
mm-hmm.
but not who they vote for.
Mm-hmm.
But so many people fought to get us a single vote in Northern Ireland. It's imperative and essential that we go in and take a vote, put it in our pocket if we like. But it's essential that we use our vote.
Yeah. Now, so those two incidents, one when the bomb didn't go off, the other one when it did and it burnt, did it were you in any way injured? Were you in the house at the time?
Luckily,
your family here?
Luckily, my son woke up. The house, that side of the house there, the window blew in and the spout was all burned. But nobody was injured.
And it happened at night time.
It happened at 2 o'clock in the morning.
So, and nobody claimed responsibility
for doing
that.
And because I'm who I am, my insurance wouldn't pay me because the fires proved to be malicious. The Northern Ireland government wouldn't pay me because I'm labelled an IRA man.
Why would you be labelled?
Because of every time this place was searched, we had run on battles with the army, we'd boxed, we assaulted each other. I don't like them, I had no time for them. I objected to being asked my name every day, every time they met me. Mr. Baker, what's your name? You know, I totally objected to...
So that was intimidation too.
And I don't do intimidated, Morris.
Yeah.
You don't intimidate me, sorry.
Where were you, when you were delivering Hurleys down south and mm-hmm. you were coming back, were you ever...
By the God of Shikana?
Yes.
Not really, no. But I found, Morris, that... Because I trained Monaghan hurling team to an All Ireland final, and I played a lot of my hurling. I've an Ulster medal with Monaghan, right? And a lot of the people who played with Monaghan.
A senior medal?
You know, a junior, an All Ireland junior medal, sorry, an Ulster junior medal.
Okay.
A lot of the people who played with Monaghan were guards, were southern guys.
Mm-hmm.
They were coming north, and they were stationed along the border, and they played with Monaghan.
I see.
And luckily, I could compete with them at all levels because I had a hurling in my hand for those that size. And my father and I, every Sunday, went out to the field at the back of the house. We spent hours pucking that ball about. And he'd make you pucker with your bad hand all the time. If you understand me.
My father was
immersed in the game.
Yeah. He's
totally passionate about it, as I am. I went to the Ulster, I this year would go to the Antrim semi-finals and finals. Our hullers would be self and my wife would be Munster finalists, Leinster finalists. We were in Killarney the day that your man stood up and said, the famine is over. But they call him... The Tipperary, what's his name? He ended up managing them, I forget his name now. He said, one of the problems was the grey hairs as interfered with the memory process, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but anyway, you You delivered your Hurleys to many, many clubs throughout the country.
We sent them all over the world. We sent them to Dubai, Australia, Alaska, America, Canada, Africa.
Yeah. Talk to me about the day you went down to deliver Hurleys down to Kerry.
Mm-hmm. Well, that morning, on the Wonder morning, I was stopped by a fellow by the name of Ian. A big, blonde, fine-looking lad. I know you see him, man. But he was a very intelligent guy. He would be very nice to your face and talk to you and get as much information as he could from you and then say goodbye, have a good journey. Ian Wilson. Ian Wilson, but I knew Ian for what he was and would play the game with him. And where are you going? You see, in Morris, in this part of the world, there was a shop on the Clonus side of the border called Jimmy Moan's. And there was a shop on the northern side of the border called Morris Allen's. So when you're stopped at the checkpoint, you're coming from Morris Allen's and you're going to Jimmy Moan's.
I see, yes.
And today I was at my occupation. Today I was a doctor. Tomorrow I was on the dole. The day after I was an OUC man. That's how the game was played. You give them as little information as you could and told them as many lies as you could. Because they've no right to know what my occupation is. They've no right to know where I'm coming from or where I'm going. They don't have that right. They've no God-given rights over me.
What happened when you came back from Kerry?
Pulled up on the street here and they were sitting waiting on me. And brought him to the station and asked where I was. And of course I wouldn't tell them where I was because where I was not in their jurisdiction. But then they laid it all right in front of me. I didn't comment one way or the other.
Did they know exactly where
they were? They knew exactly where I was. No, only from Kerry backward. So obviously the guards had trailed me back home and gave the information to WC.
And is that because there was something happening in Kerry?
There was an arms fine and there was an IRA arms fine in Tralee that day. Now, I knew nothing about it because I hadn't seen anybody, hadn't been stopped by anybody. I was in, where I delivered the Hurleys in Tralee was a country place. It wasn't in Tralee town. I do remember it was a country person. I would, get name and address and, deliver the Hurleys there.
And that?
Actually, it was a phenomenal system and it wasn't abused because there was no room for abuse.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the club got the Hurleys and we couldn't be abused because the Central Council paid for them. And the Central Council then could take the money off the county board because they were giving the money to the county board. So they couldn't be at a loss. And if you go down to your big hurling counties or your big football counties, every kid has a ball or a hurl. And that's where it starts.
And so because of your trade and because of your
obnoxiousness is the word I would use.
But your background, Republican background... Obviously people would see you as a threat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you had to bring up a family, you had to make a living, you had to work out here.
Yeah.
But you're telling me you never got involved in any way.
No.
But you put up with it.
Yeah. When Frank Maguire became MP, I canvassed Frank Maguire. Frank Maguire would have been a nationalist, but Frank Maguire was the oldest. You know who I'm talking about? Frank Maguire, who was Mr. Ski?
Yeah.
The guy who brought down the British government and won vote. That was the way to do it. But people, if you go into Nissen Ski, Morris, people will tell you the Nissen Ski that Frank Maguire helped as many non-Catholics financially, morally, in every way he could, as he helped Catholics.
Just your own community here, Newtown Butler, there was so many killings here.
There was,
And you knew these people.
Yeah.
You must have.
Yeah, there was a guy across the road here, Morrow was his name. What was his first name? Morrow, what was his, I forget his first name.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was again lifted very shortly after it and brought into the station, sat down and said what was going on, and I was told that I had been following this man every Sunday morning for the last month, spot doing his movements and all that sort of thing in a red car, red Vauxhall Viva number ABCD. And of course I smiled to myself because I have you again. You see, I was educated. I don't mean that being an authority, but also I'm afraid of nobody, and I believe I'm as big and as good as the next guy. You won't talk me down, you won't belittle me. I just smile at you and go on ahead. You won't even beat me into submission, because I don't know how to give up. But getting back. And I'm trying to give you a picture of who I am, Maurice, if you understand what I mean.
No, I can grasp that, but what I can't grasp is you know, living in a community.
But you see, I'll tell you why when you listen to this wee story, and about the Red Vauxhall Viva, and the question for 3 or 4 hours, and I sat there smiling, you know, whatever you think, you know, if you're right, go ahead, charge me, laughed at them. They brought me home anyway, and I said, is that the car in the back studio? He said, yes, that's the car there. So I opened the bonnet. There's no engine in the car. There's been no engine in that car, boys, for the last 2 months. The engine's in the workshop getting fixed. Fucking egregious. I had more instances, Maurice, of that.
Yeah.
You know,
Did that create some kind of tension between...
No, that endorsed my superiority.
Yes, but there was tension.
Of course there was tension. Of course there was tension. That's why everything was stopped. You were taken out of the car. They abused my wife. They abused here. I landed home from Newry with a load of coal one day. Right? And again, we're sitting waiting. I would be in Newry. The Weybridge opened in Newry at 6:30. I'd be sitting for the Weybridge to open. Come home with my load of coal and we're standing in the yard from early morning, waiting for me to come back. And they went down and ripped every bag with the coal, heaved the coal onto the ground.
What did you do about that?
Smiled. Because it's what they can't take. They cannot take you smiling at them.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
It's
a psychological war, Maurice.
I know, but...
And that was the only weapon I had. I couldn't take a gun. I hadn't got a gun. Didn't want a gun.
And that terrible, you know, kind of bitterness between people nobody's trusted anybody.
It's not a bitterness, Maurice. Not on my part. Because I don't believe... I have no bitterness against any Protestant. It's the British government. People got this all wrong. It's not the Protestant people of Northern Ireland. They have been duped by the British government.
It's an extraordinary story. I mean, when you put together all the stories, is that tension? When did it go away? Did it go away with the Good Friday Agreement?
I never had a tension with my neighbours. Never had. And my wife and I go to dances in Protestant halls when they're having fundraisers. We go to support them. They'd never come to my halls. But we would still go and support. They're part of my community. We had Protestant guys working for us. I didn't say, you're a Protestant, you can't work for me. I remember one occasion, a fellow worked for me named John Johnson. There was a UDR man shot over in Derry Lynn, and we were working on Florence Court. And John says, I'm not going over there to work. He says, no, I'll be shot. I say, John, how would you be shot? He says, they're working for you, they'll shoot us all. So we didn't go for that fortnight, but they burned the tractor on me, which was over in the area. So John was right.
Yeah.
But I mean, Morris, people have the wrong conception about Northern Ireland, I think. For example, this is a very typical example. When they took the flag off the city hall in Belfast, the Protestant people took to the streets and they brought Northern Ireland to a standstill. Right? At the moment, there's no government. We have known nothing. We're on our knees. And many people are bringing Northern Ireland, and many people are standing up and saying, we want health, education, A, B, C, D, and F.
What happened on the 12th of July here?
In this area?
Yeah.
Well, the parades were where they were. And as far as we're concerned, it's just another day. They didn't bother us. We didn't bother them. I didn't go to the parade. I didn't go near the parade. Let them parade away. That's their prerogative.
And there was never any kind
of... Not with me. Because they're not... Look at Morris. I'm up here. You've seen them coming up. I'm in my own wee cul-de-sac up here, and this has been our saving grace.
I see. Yes.
And when we want to relax, we go south.
Yeah.
W.F. McCoy, QCMP, lived beside us, and my father would have done a lot of work for him.
That's in your home, is it?
At home, above, yeah. And so did I. And when I was building this place, I went to McCoy to buy some trees to cut the wood to build my roof. And he said to me, Finian, I didn't give you, come out and we'll mark what you want. When I said to him, how much of you to get, he said, I forgot to get you a wedding present, will that do? This is 3 years later. There were so many contradictions. There was another guy at home, Noble Hutchison, who lived half a mile from my house. Noble was a UDR man, sorry, the old B specialist man. Well, B special, my father would have borrowed Noble's grey mare Massey Ferguson tractor to use the pulley on it to drive his sander. And I remember Noble Hutchison coming off duty, and Daddy wouldn't be finished working, and Noble would give him a hand in the uniform to sand Hurley's.
Really? So there you
right?
are.
Right. And the other side of that story was he had another brother, Robbie, who joined the RUC reserve. And he prevented me from going to play football. You'd be safer off at home. I went past his house. He did not allow me to go past his house to go where I was going. No more, it was a public lane. That was the other brother. There's two brothers in the one house. One bitter, 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 bitter. And the other guy, a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
Two Protestant brothers were in the same place, same father, same everything.
I see. Where are we at now? Are things still...
Oh, things are... I don't know where things are, to be honest with you. I don't think that I think the whole British DUP is in total disarray.
How are things here in Newton Butler?
Things in Newton Butler are very, very, very quiet. And as a matter of fact, until recent times, there was a contentious parade here. But the Catholics have eventually got sense, and they've stopped
protesting
because the more you protest, the more the other people will protest. And when I never went to the protests, yeah. And I was actually here one time, asked one night by a fella, he said, "Oh," he said, "are you not offended by the music?" And I said, "I can barely hear it here." Well, he says, "I'm offended." Saying you drove 12 miles from Slate to Newton Butler to be offended. You're some bollocks. What you have here, something which is terrible. You have, the row in Spain, Caledonia, wasn't 5 minutes old, that the Caledonian flag stuck on the end of the town. And the Gaza flag stuck on the end of the town. And you know the funny part? Half of them couldn't spell Caledonia or Gaza.
So it'll be a while before people actually can come together as a community without any...
Morris, in this town, the Catholic population, sorry, not them all, but lots of Catholic population in this town are making huge strides to try and meet their Protestant neighbours halfway. But the Protestant neighbours won't move. Right? And when one of them was asked about it, a young fella, who was asked why did he not frequent our church and all? We've nothing against you people, but we're not against the Catholic Church. What they've got against the Catholic Church, I don't know.
Yeah,
because when the thing about the Reformation is coming up now, there's a lot of talk about the Reformation in the last couple of months.
Yeah,
they don't know who Luther was. They don't know what he objected to. They don't know anything about it all. One of the basics was indulgence for money. They don't have a clue what they're talking about. We had a great friend of my daughter's here. She was a Presbyterian from Anna Long. Lovely, lovely girl you could meet. And she healed here regularly. But it was one of the 98 Rising Centenary Radiance.
Yes.
So I took in to explain to her what the 98 Rising was about. But Henry J. McCracken and these guys, and they're all Presbyterians. She says, "What? We were never taught that."
Mm-hmm.
So the 98 Rising wasn't against the British government. As such, it was against the Church of England for not allowing people to have any rights. That's what's going on yet, like, you know. But she didn't know any of this. The Protestant, if you look at the two syllabus, is that the word I'm looking for, in Northern Ireland, the two schools?
Yes.
Sure, they're not the same at all.
Yeah.
Most of them would, if they talk about the Union Jack, for example, Morris, it's not the Union Jack, it's the Union Flag. It's only called the Union Jack, supposedly, when it's at sea. That is the actual terminology of it. I don't know when the Act of Union was, 1803. I haven't a clue what they're talking about.
Yeah. It's
you know, and they talk about the Orange Order defending working with King Willie. King Billy. King Billy was 1784 on September 25th, September 1784 in Armagh, was the foundation of the Orange Order, 104 years later.
Mm-hmm. So you're blaming history then?
I'm blaming history.
For its continuum. And you revert back to history to answer a question.
Yes, The thing about, see, Morris, I firmly believe, I have a library upstairs, half that wall, it's all Irish history books.
Yeah.
And, you see, if you look at Irish history, we were as bad to ourselves as the English were.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying to you? The Civil War, one of the reasons why I didn't join the IRA, I spoke to Jack at length, way back in the beginning. Jack, you fought in the Rising. Jack, my father's brother.
Oh yes.
Who fought with the volunteers, and said, "Finney, have nothing to do with it."
Your father said.
My uncle said, "Have nothing to do with it."
Yeah, and that kind of kept you away then.
Well, he knew what he'd been there. He'd done that.
Yeah.
And if as a matter of fact, Morris, if you go through what happened in 1922, 23, 24, 25. And go back what happened from 95 onward here.
Yeah.
The carbon copies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Carbon copies. But the Home Rule Bill hasn't really changed in all that time to what we're getting now. Hasn't changed with a damn.
Yeah. But answer me one last question. Just one question. Your Protestant neighbour across the way.
Yeah.
How different is he to you? You know, the fact that he's Irish,
he's not Irish, you see, Morris. He's not Irish. A Protestant neighbour is not Irish. Disabuse yourself of that. He is not Irish. He's not even Northern Irish. That is the big stumbling block. He goes to England, he's called Paddy. But here, he's a Brit through and through and through and through and through. And they don't even know the proper name for the flag. They leave it on the pole. It's a tattered rag.
And so what else is different about him, do you see?
First of all, they can't dance.
Yeah.
Standing joke is, you can make three bigs, but you can't dance. That's a standing joke. And that is a joke. But no, they can't. There's no timing.
Yeah.
For such a musical... We love the pipes.
Yeah.
And we would go to the local Protestant tattoo here, if you like, for want of a better word. And we really enjoy the pipes. And we don't care who sees us. But that'd be the big difference. They'd never come to a Catholic thing.
Yeah.
Do you understand? What I mean?
I do.
I think, Morris, we are happy in our skins. And they are not. They're looking over the shoulder all the time. Someday England's going to drop them. They're looking over the shoulder all the time.
Finian Baker, thank you. Thank you very much for talking to me.